Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. As you have noticed, Wednesday upload instead of the normal Tuesday. I'm recording on Tuesday instead of the usual Monday, just because you know how it is, Memorial Day weekend. It's a long weekend. Game 7 was Monday night. Heat came out on top. They almost blew their 3-0 lead, but they dominated Game 7 in Boston. Boston losing a shocking amount of games at home during this playoff run. But the Heat now will play the Nuggets. They're all set. They could have closed this out last week, had some days off, just like the Nuggets. The Nuggets are going on, as I'm recording right now, they've already had a week off. They won like last Monday, right? Last Tuesday. So they've had a week off. Final start on Thursday. And I mean, this is really going to put a test to the rust versus rest debate about whether you'd rather have your team get some time off in between series, specifically going to the championship, or would you rather just have a couple days off and then roll right into it? So that's going to be put to the test here with the Nuggets sweeping the Lakers and the Heat beating Boston in 7. So we'll get into all that, Boston's future, finals preview, all that good stuff. Watched a couple movies this past week. Succession finale was amazing. A lot of TV. That was good. Some football news as well with the Cardinals and DeAndre Hopkins parting ways. The Cardinals cut him. He is now a free agent, free to sign with whomever he would like. Sixers hire Nick Nurse. All that good stuff. Remember, if you sign up to Underdog Fantasy, download the Underdog Fantasy app and sign up using promo code Animal House, you get 100% match deposit up to $100. Quick and easy. Link is in the bio. Again, sign up to Underdog Fantasy. You do the pick'em entries, which I like. You can do daily fantasy. Really diverse app and a lot of fun. So once again, use promo code Animal House. You get 100% match deposit up to $100. So our housekeeping Guardians, quick review here. I know it's been a few weeks. I got around to seeing it super late. Really good. Probably the best thing that Marvel has produced since Spider-Man. It's the best movie outside of Spider-Man in the past 3 years that Marvel's put out, 4 years, since 2019, basically, since Endgame. It's definitely better than the second Spider-Man movie. So I know a lot of people are saying that it's probably the best thing that they've put out since Endgame. I like Spider-Man. I know some people were like, oh, it's nostalgia-driven, it's not that good. I beg to differ. I think it's still a really good movie, holds up. Nostalgia is obviously there, but I think it creates a great character development for Peter as Spider-Man and all that. So I'm still going to edge it out there, but Guardians was great. Some of my negatives, I would say, I wish there was a little bit more of Adam Warlock, because he was teased to be, the villain. I remember at the end of Guardians 2, and then instead they opted to go with a Rocket Raccoon backstory with the High Evolutionary, who was an awesome villain. Totally sadistic, power hungry, really just a miserable piece of shit. Don't get a lot of villains like that anymore. You know, they always have like some type of, well, he has a point kind of thing ever since Thanos, really, you know? No, not with the High Evolutionary. He is just strictly selfish in his goals, in creating, he says, a utopia of like perfect beings, but treats everything like shit. You know, he's a mad scientist, basically. Really, really, really well done in terms of the villain. Again, I wish there was a little bit more Adam Warlock. He was a bit more comic relief than actual like threat. Although in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the movie, when he shows up on nowhere and just absolutely houses the Guardians, nearly kills Rocket Raccoon, setting off the chain of events of the movie. That was pretty cool. Like he almost killed Drax too. So he easily could probably kill most of the Guardians. And he really put a beat down on them. Even, you know, Nebula got really banged up. And Nebula's new arm reminds me a lot of the Sentry things, from X-Men Days of Future Past. It's like that same graphite looking, like shifting malleable material where it like adapts to what she needs, basically. And that's, I mean, I don't know if it's a direct like thing to X-Men Days of Future Past, but James Gunn, I'm sure, definitely took some inspiration from that, because it's like basically the same thing. Thought that was pretty cool. I really appreciate James Gunn's use of practical effects, especially when they land on the High Evolutionary's counter-Earth thing that they got going on with all those different animal-looking anthropomorphic characters. Most of them, I mean, obviously there's some CGI in there, but a lot of that is like practical effects. Really appreciate that. So it's not just one giant CGI slop fest. I mean, obviously Rocket's backstory was tragic as it you could have imagined it to be for him. Really sad. Chris Pratt, I thought, was awesome in this movie. He does like pain really well. When like something is painful and emotional, he does it really well. Like when, you know, Rocket's on the table and he's nearly dying, Chris Pratt is locked in. Guardians 2, when Yondu dies sacrificing himself, like Chris Pratt, I watch that clip on YouTube and I'll still get choked up. So he's awesome. Nebula, really good in this movie as well. Gamora, they kind of flesh out a little bit more what she's been up to ever since she's like back in this new timeline and she doesn't know who the Guardians are and there's no history there and stuff. Because his, you know, Chris Pratt, Star-Lord, his Gamora's dead. He's still kind of trying to work past that. Guess he's been drinking a lot. Rocket's more or less been the de facto leader of the Guardians. And that's how it ends out too, with the end credit scene. Everyone kind of goes their separate ways to more or less find themselves and find different things to do and get closure for certain things, whereas Rocket ends up leading the new Guardians. I think it ends up being one of the people that they save from the High Evolutionary Chips, one of the children. Adam Warlock, Yondu's Sean Gunn, who plays the guy who not replaces Yondu, but he takes Yondu's like arrow with the fin on his head. Him, Rocket, and Groot, who in the end credit scene is just he's twice as big naturally as he was in the original Guardians, so he's just way, way bigger and stronger. It was awesome, so I liked it a lot. Definitely the best thing Marvel's put out in quite a while. I'm probably not even gonna go see the Marvels. It just looks like another generic, like, beat 'em up girl boss thing. I don't know if I can handle it. And I didn't even see Miss Marvel, the Disney Plus show. I'm not watching that. It looked horrible. It just looks bad. I don't know, man. It looks really, really bad. Things aren't going great for a lot of the things that I like. In regards to like movies and stuff, and the Disney Plus stuff's getting old too now. It's not good. It's just not good. I am extremely excited for, however, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which comes out this weekend. Unfortunately, I will be away on a little vacation post Memorial Day weekend. Thursday to Sunday, I'll be gone. So that next week, who knows? Maybe I'll have like a, maybe I'll do another thing where I record Tuesday. Record Tuesday, put out episode Wednesday. Maybe I'll see it Monday. I don't know. We'll see. Or maybe I'll just put out, you know what? I might just do a solo episode of Across the Spider-Verse and just do a 30-minute Across the Spider-Verse review. And call it a day, like completely separate from the podcast. But I will definitely go see it next week, during the week, for sure. I'm very excited for it. It's a little bit different of a feeling because I'm super excited for this movie, whereas the first one, I remember audibly being like, oh my God, why are they making another Spider-Man movie? Because I'm pretty sure, you know, Far From Home had just come out. Or maybe it was Homecoming. I don't remember which one it was. But one of the live-action Spider-Mans for Marvel had just come out. And then they came out with this animated movie, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about the animation. It looks kind of weird. Why are they putting out an animated Spider-Man movie with Miles Morales? They just had a live-action one with Marvel. Like, what is Sony doing? I eventually went to go see it about a week after it released, and I was like, holy shit, this movie is so good. Obviously, it's like one of the best Spider-Man movies ever. Really, really great. The animation, like some of my friends still to this day won't believe me that the animation is great and like really, really, really good. But yeah, it is. The animation's fantastic. Gives that comic book feel. It's just fantastic. So now it's like a complete opposite effect where I'm going into this movie with high expectations. Yeah, I'm super excited to see it. And, you know, I'll put out a review whenever that movie comes around. I watched the new White Men Can't Jump. Not nearly as good as the original, but I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was just a very lighthearted buddy comedy, basketball comedy. Both of these former Hoopers, one was a prodigy who got arrested the night of like a state championship game or something like that. And he's known to have a temper, but he actually has a dad who has MS, and that's a source of like how he feels like he let him down and all that kind of stuff. And the other one who played by Jack Harlow, he was at Gonzaga, tore both his ACLs, never was able, his body betrayed him, you know, classic body betraying you storyline for him. Both of them are kind of struggling to make ends meet with their girlfriends. And they bond over basketball and hustling for money while trying to get a buy-in to this like 2-on-2 tournament, which they inevitably lose. And then they have to get another buy-in to enter this bigger tournament, which is like a $500,000 cash prize, which they, spoiler alert, win. Not nearly as like serious as the first one. Jack Harlow was funny in his own right. You know, he kind of just felt like he was playing Jack Harlow, honestly. If you watched him in interviews and stuff and how he talks to people and how he interacts, he's basically just playing himself in this. He's witty, he's goofy, loves basketball, you know, wears New Balance. That's that's it. The premise is not, it's loosely the same premise, very loosely, in so that they use the white guy who's good at basketball to hustle people for money. That's about it. They could not even sniff the charisma and chemistry that Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes had in the original White Men Can't Jump. It wasn't horrible, but for it to be like a spiritual successor and reboot of the original was pretty crap. It shares this in the same name only, and the fact that it's like, oh, this white guy who dresses goofy is actually really good at basketball. That's about it. That's the only similarities. Everything else is kind of different. The first one is definitely better, but the second one, you know, if you want like a funny sports movie, like turn it on for an hour and a half, I think it was. It wasn't even a long movie, so it was fine in that regard. Yeah, that's all. That's all I have for that. And then the Succession finale, one of the best television shows ever. Yeah, Kendall, my number one boy. I'm a Kendall rider, man. I am a Kendall rider. Don't listen to this if you haven't watched the finale yet. Tom winning. Wham's Gams on top, baby. Oh, man. What an ending. You had a feeling they were going to get, or Kendall was going to get fucked over one last time. And of course, it comes from Shiv, who would rather sacrifice any type of happiness that her brothers have because she hates them, that she can't be on that same pedestal. her closest sniff of power that she's ever going to get is through her estranged husband, who their marriage not really good, one would say. Roman's finally out of it, which I think he's kind of just been like the weights lifted off his shoulders in a sense for him. Shiv is stuck in a loveless marriage with a child to a man she doesn't want to be with, but she's going to stay with because she's, like I said, he's now the closest bit of power that she's ever going to come by, and she's probably going to be miserable. And then Kendall has nothing. The birthday episode, if you forget, that really highlighted the fact that even though he has all this money, yes, they're all billionaires in their own right. They don't necessarily need the company or need that leverage of being a CEO or a high leverage, executive chair person, whatever, because they're all billionaires. Before the Gojo deal, they were all billionaires. And now after the Gojo deal, they're even more so. But Kendall's not happy with the money doesn't make him happy. You know, he says that his dad promised the company to him when he was 7. This was something he's been groomed for. He felt like it was his. And now he doesn't have it. It is forever out of reach. He will never, ever, ever, ever be able to capture that goal that he so long craved. And he has essentially ruined his life by trying to become his dad. He's probably never going to talk to Shiv again. He's never going to talk to Roman again, maybe. His wife and his kids don't really want anything to do with him. He doesn't have the company. He doesn't really have any real friends, you know? And who's the bodyguard? Logan's bodyguard, Colin. Loosely following him around in that eerie way to kind of make sure, you know, he doesn't, like, kill himself. Which, and then cutting to black as the music cuts out and you just hear the ocean. Again, that water motif with Kendall is a huge thing with him throughout all the seasons. Phenomenal. Phenomenal ending. Everyone more or less got what they deserved. And you had a feeling it was going to end up with one last backstab, as it always does. Courtesy of Shiv this time, of course. I believe the last time they tried to get Kendall in the CEO, Roman kind of buckled at the knees and voted no. Right? In season 1, I think it was. So, fantastic. Just, you can go on and on and on and on and on and on about this show. I'm not going to, because obviously that would take up the entire episode. And I haven't really been talking about it too much, but I have watched it. I loved every second of it. This show was one of the rare ones where it was just captivating from start to finish. The ending was satisfying just because the ending might have been quote-unquote predictable in some sense. Doesn't mean it's bad, right? You don't have to have some plot twist ending, or even though they did kind of have a plot twist ending that it kind of felt like it was coming, but, you know, there was that small shred of hope where after, you know, Shiv and Roman decide, yeah, Kendall on top, and they quote unquote anoint him, you can see as it's finally coming to the board meeting and the vote that something uneasy is happening between them. Kendall's able to convince Roman with that whole pain thing that and abuse that his father did kind of to whip him into shape, you know, good boy, obey, stuff like that. And then Shiv, you could kind of see, just grew easy, even more uncomfortable. And they always say shit, like, Kendall's never going to talk to Shiv again because she betrayed him again. When she goes, I love you, but I cannot fucking stomach you, I was like, this, you guys don't love each other. But because Shiv betrayed Kendall, he'll never talk to her again. And then Roman saying Kendall's kids aren't real because one is adopted and the other one was from a different marriage or a different man in Rava's life from a previous relationship. And Roman saying, like, what? Dad said it. I'm just saying what Dad would say, you know? And then Kendall kind of grabs him by his face and, like, squeezes his face, trying to basically tear his head off, pop his skull open. And him just completely losing it there is, like, yeah, he's never going to talk to any of them again. Obviously, you want to think, like, yeah, he has billions of dollars. Like, start your own company, become the CEO of that, show everyone that you're not a joke, you're not bullshit, as Roman says at the end. And you can make it happen, but that's just not how these kids are wired. That's not how these people are wired. And they're all awful individuals. Bad people. They have no real friends. They have no real meaningful relationships. Everything's manipulation. Everything is to a higher goal. And now that they have been stripped of everything, as Roman says, they're nothing. Jesse Armstrong says that in the end, the ending breakdown. He says that's kind of like that hard message that they all deliver. And Roman says it. It's like, we are bullshit. This is bullshit. We're bullshit. It's not real, right? Yeah, just a phenomenal ending to this show. Again, one of the rare shows you get that are just basically flawless from start to finish. Like, truly flawless from start to finish. Obviously there are episodes that are like kind of meaningless in the grand scheme of everything, but this last season specifically was just jam-packed with every single line of dialogue. Every single minute was meaningful and tying to the end. And of course, Shiv, finally, everyone was saying, like, is this fact that, you know, only had Kendall not told his siblings that he killed the waiter, he probably would be CEO, because Shiv doesn't have that in her back pocket to kind of whip out at the last second and be like, you can't be CEO because you killed someone. So, sorry. Like, she's a piece of shit. I hate her so much. But to say that to Kendall when he confided in them as siblings, like, nothing is off limits with these kids. They just throw dagger after dagger at each other. And, you know, Kendall just digging himself this hole of being like, it wasn't real. I made it up in my head to, like, cope with something, whatever. And then them realizing, like, oh my God, he's totally lost his marbles. Did he kill someone? Did he not kill someone? Was it a play? Because if it was a play, that makes it so much worse, maybe, in a way, to them. Obviously, and then, you like, Roman is just like, please, Shiv, go vote for Kendall. Like, please do it. And then you could see in this moment when he starts doing that, he's just completely like, oh my God, dude, no, like, you can't do this. You can't do it anymore. I don't want you to do it anymore. He just completely abandons that. And then he says some foul shit about Kendall's kids, to which even Shiv was like, Roman, like, what the hell? So just really, like, haymakers back and forth in this room between these three kids. I keep saying kids, they're all adults, but they're the Roy kids, I should say. But, like, you got to think, if Kendall never broke down and told that fact to Shiv and Roman, that secret would be between Colin and Logan. And Colin, obviously, Logan's friend and confidant and bodyguard. He knows a lot of secrets. And that's why Kendall kind of recruits him to come work for him, right? And be his bodyguard. And talk to him and not a therapist, you know? So they would have been the only two people that would know. And then obviously Logan dies, so he's not gonna say anything, nor would he anyway, because it would ruin everything he has, but not ruin everything he has, but it would be a bad look on him, which he doesn't want, obviously. But if he just didn't tell his siblings, he'd probably be CEO. So I know everyone was wondering, did that plot line die? No pun intended. Did that plot line die in a couple episodes when it was never brought up? You know, at these monumental points, and here we are at the apex of this decision. Are they going to sell? Are they going to keep it? And Shiv whips it out of her back pocket and says, you killed someone, you can't be CEO. Insane ending. Highly recommend to anyone if you haven't watched. Obviously, if you just listened to this, then I just spoiled everything for you, so hopefully you didn't. But yeah, oh my God, what a show. All right, some NFL news. Housekeeping here. The Cardinals, as mentioned, cut DeAndre Hopkins. The Cardinals are... I would be shocked if the Cardinals did not end up with the number one pick next year. They are horrible. Kyler Murray's probably not going to play. And even if he does play, like, they're not good. Like, they're not a good football team. He just lost, obviously, his number one target. So he's gone. they are in full rebuild, or at least rebuild around Kyler, with the idea that he'll come back and they'll be competitive again, even though I'm not very high on Kyler Murray. I never have been. I don't think he's very good. I think he's severely overrated. Not, I shouldn't say he's very good. He's not very good. He's good. He's just severely overrated, and the Cardinals just can't get it together. I thought Cliff Kingsbury was a huge problem. Obviously, they fired him. So things are in a tough spot for Arizona. They're in a questionable position. They got to start rebuilding. I loved what they did in the first round of the draft, and in the draft in general, moving down, moving back up, acquiring an extra first, drafting an offensive tackle. Think that was all smart in that first round. Good malleability that they had there. And their draft in general, I think, was pretty solid. But yeah, they're kind of just stuck in limbo right now in terms of what they have to do. If Kyler's not in by like week 6 or 7, which he absolutely will not be, I wouldn't play him at all. I think they're definitely weighing those options. Like, do we just call it now? Like, does Kyler just sit out this entire year and come back next year fully healthy and we're all good? Maybe we can build up a little bit, get our draft picks, get everyone seasoned. It's tough. It's a very, very tough predicament for them to be in. I don't think they'd be very good anyway with Kyler Murray, but they definitely would have kept DeAndre Hopkins if Kyler Murray was going to be the starting quarterback to start the year. So Hopkins, according to my Sleeper app, he posted a Jets picture or something on his Instagram the other day. So we have Texans, Cardinals, Superstar Wives recently posted a Jets logo on his Instagram story. So that's, you know, something. Maybe he goes to the Jets. That would be, I mean, listen, if you're the Jets, you're calling him every other hour of the day. Like, you're texting him. Sauce was huge in recruiting Aaron Rodgers, being like, let's go, let's get this to happen. They've been hanging out. To get a veteran, sensational wide receiver like DeAndre Hopkins to pair him with Aaron Rodgers, Garrett Wilson. Obviously, they brought in Alan Lazard and some other Rodgers favorites. That would be huge. Like, no exaggeration, that would propel the Jets, in my mind, to probably the best team in the AFC East. Getting someone like DeAndre Hopkins, I know he's like 32, 33, whatever it is, he still can ball. Like, he can ball with the best of them. And again, Aaron Rodgers there, you don't know how long you have with him. You know, you don't know if it's just this year. You don't know if it's 2 years, which would probably be the max. Like, that's the maximum amount of time you have with Aaron Rodgers is 2 years. So you have to go, if I'm them, I'm going hard in on DeAndre Hopkins. I think there was another thing that said some on a podcast, Hopkins said that he would like to play with, you know, the best quarterbacks in football. Obviously, he just rattled them off. Burrow, Mahomes, Herbert, Lamar, Rodgers. So I guess all those guys would generally be in the mix. But yeah, I'm looking at the Jets to make a hard push here. That would be well within their interests to do, for sure. And just a slight rule change that happened last week. Kind of weird. I don't like it. They're like killing the kickoff. You might as well not even kick off at this point. You know, just start the ball as soon as there is a score or whatever. Start the ball or a punt. Start the ball immediately, like, you don't need, or obviously a punt's different, but as soon as there's a score, like, you don't even need a kickoff. Just give the ball to the opposing team at the 25-yard line and say go at this point, because now there's a new kickoff rule that allows fair catches outside of the end zone. So, obviously, touchbacks have always been a thing. If the ball hits the end zone or goes out of the back of the end zone, the ball gets placed on the 25-yard line, and the possession begins. Now, if the ball is not in the end zone, if it's short of the end zone, you can call a fair catch. It used to be you have to field it and you have to run with the ball or let it bounce and go out of the end zone, right? Now, if you call a fair catch, it could be at the 1 yard line. If you call a fair catch and catch it, obviously, dead ball, spotted at the 25. Whack. Whack. Now, this just proves to me with these rule changes, the NFL had said they hope to see concussions be reduced by 15% with this new kickoff rule. So, you know, they just put it under the umbrella of player safety or whatever. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. I think that it's a whack rule. And honestly, because this rule is made, it gives you that much more of an argument to put Devin Hester in the Hall of Fame. Devin Hester is the greatest kick and punt returner of all time. All time. Every time he touched the ball, it was a threat for him to take it back to the house for a touchdown. He was a game changer as a special teams guy. Obviously, yes, he played some cornerback. Yes, he played some wide receiver. He wasn't necessarily very good or elite at those positions, but he is the best special teams player of all time. No question in my mind, right? So you get punters and kickers in the Hall of Fame, right? Devin Hester should be in the Hall of Fame. He should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. He's been, I think, a finalist the past couple years, just hasn't gotten in. He will get in at some point. He will. He has to. And this is just a further argument. We will never see another Devin Hester. Ever. As long as I live, there'll never be another. I'll go as far to say there won't even be another Cordarrelle Patterson. Because I think Cordarrelle Patterson set the record for kickoff return touchdowns last season. Hester still has punts and total kick special teams touchdowns. He has punts and total. But kickoffs, specifically kickoffs, Cordarrelle Patterson has the most. We won't even see another Cordarrelle Patterson. Which, obviously, you think of special teams guys. You think of, I don't know, Dante Hall, Devin Hester, Josh Cribbs. Cordarrelle Patterson is a guy that is in that conversation now as well. But he was sensational. He is sensational and still is. And he's a weapon for the Falcons. I don't know if he's still on the Falcons, actually. But, he's... Like, you're not even ever going to see another guy like him on kickoff returns. It started, obviously, when they moved the kickoff up to the 30-yard line. And now, even more so, you know, you got this fair catch rule. You're killing it. It's just ceremonial at this point. There's no real purpose to do it. You know, on the off chance the kicker has a bad kick and it's, you know, illegal touching out of bounds or illegal kick out of bounds, and then the receiving team gets the ball at the 40-yard line, and that's it. Like, that's the only thing that can come out of a kickoff here. Everything else at this point is most likely, in like 95% of the time, going to just be a touchback. Take it at the 25. It's stupid. It just makes me really upset because I am a huge fan of Devin Hester. I had a Devin Hester jersey growing up. Like, he was one of my favorite players, man. I thought he was awesome. So you're just taking away an element of the game. Like, what are the only special teams touchdowns you're going to see now? The occasional punt return, and in more likelihood, the blocked punt return for a touchdown. Or like a botched snap. Are we ever going to see a kickoff? Are we going to see one kickoff return this year for a touchdown? I doubt it. I would be shocked if we saw one. Hate it. Hate the rule. It's an unnecessary rule. I get it. Player safety is important, but you're already doing so much. You know, it's with the rules and the penalties that are getting called and trying to protect players. You're doing a lot. You've already done a lot. I think taking away the kickoff like this is stupid. Unnecessary, almost. But under the umbrella of player safety, how can you argue against it, really, you know? Put Devin Hester in the Hall of Fame. That's the main point of this rule change, is that We'll never see another Devin Hester. He is one of one. Put him in the Hall of Fame. That's what it's for, right? Putting all-time one-of-one players into the Hall of Fame. That immortalizing them. Devin Hester deserves it. All right. Time to get to the NBA Finals. Or no, actually, Nick Nurse. Right, we'll talk a little bit about the Sixers. Probably last time we talk about them for a while until we hear what happens with James Harden. I saw ESPN on First Take, their bottom line said, like, what do the Sixers look like with Nick Nurse, Embiid, and Harden? And I'm like, is Harden even going to come back? Like, they're just assuming that James Harden's going to stay with the Philadelphia 76ers? I don't know, man. I think Harden's gone. I don't think there's any shot he comes back to Philly, but hey, I've been wrong before, so we'll keep tabs on that. But even without Harden, I think Philly has a chance to obviously still be a top five seed in the East fairly easily. Joel Embiid is still one of the best players in the league. I know he had an absolute stinker of the last couple of games, six and seven against the Celtics. Real bad. I mean, Harden obviously was equally, if not more so, horrible. But Nick Nurse, I think, is a great coach. Nick Nurse is a fantastic coach. I like what he did with Toronto. Obviously, they won a championship thanks to him, but also in a large part to the acquisition of Kawhi Leonard. He's a good coach. He helped mold that Raptors franchise into a winning organization. And then Kawhi put them over the top, of course. But he's a good coach. I think he is what Philly needs because he is a guy who can adjust on the fly and can make those in-game decisions, whereas Doc Rivers has struggled mightily his entire career to do so. And I saw that there's this weird narrative now going on that coaching wasn't the problem because for the 76ers. It was more Embiid and Harden falling flat in the moment. Doc Rivers didn't necessarily deserve to be fired. To which I say, you are all idiots and revisionists, okay? Doc Rivers should have been fired after they lost to the Hawks. Should have been gone. There's no way he should have stayed, okay? And especially after the shit he said about Ben Simmons in the post-game press conference, that is just not what you need from a head coach and someone who's supposed to lead your organization. He should have been gone after that. I'm sorry. And yes, I'm defending Ben Simmons. I absolutely am because I think Doc Rivers and his comments towards Ben Simmons and how he treated Ben Simmons in the organization, I think that had a large thing to do with how Ben Simmons' mental health and confidence were drained from his psyche, from his body, you know? It had, and obviously Joel Embiid didn't help things like that either, but we've seen teammates play together and not get along. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Embiid was just confident, I mean, if Simmons was still confident and he was able to just, like, still attack the hoop and all that, he could play with Embiid, and they could have played on the court together and not got along. We've seen that before. We've seen that work before, to a degree, of course. But when your head coach is, like, throwing you under the goddamn bus, I don't know, man. I'm not saying Ben Simmons is completely void of any responsibility here. I think a lot of it falls on his shoulders. But Doc Rivers should have been fired. What was that, 2 years ago? A year ago? I don't even remember. But he didn't deserve to coach this year, I'll tell you that much. He did not deserve to coach, or 2 years ago, I think. 3 years ago? I don't even remember, man. God. When did they lose to the Hawks? 2 years ago, I'm going to say. I'll put it on that. But they didn't deserve that. Like, he didn't deserve to be the head coach after that point, in my opinion. So this weird narrative going on right now being like Doc Rivers wasn't the problem or coaching wasn't the problems, but like Nick Nurse is he's a good coach. Nick Nurse, I think, is currently a better coach than Doc Rivers. And, you know, you could say whatever you want. Sometimes coaches, you know, they go stale. Their methods and their abilities don't necessarily translate with how the game changes, you know? So I think Nick Nurse will be a good fit there for the 76ers. I think he is a fresh face that they needed. I think Doc Rivers will probably find himself another job somewhere. I just don't know if it'll be with a team that is ready to win now. Like the Suns, for example. I know his name was probably thrown out in the coaching conversations for them. I would be shocked if he landed there. But who is left of the big... And the Bucks hired a Raptors assistant coach for their job, their head coaching vacancy. Let me get his name up real quick. Adrian Griffin, who I believe is AJ Griffin, who plays for the Hawks, his father. I did not fact check that, but my friend said it and it sounded true. So let me see. AJ Griffin. Adrian Darnell AJ Griffin Jr. Father Adrian played in the NBA for 10 seasons before becoming a coach in the league, serves as the assistant coach for the Raptors. Sure is right. So the Bucks are hiring, again, Raptors assistant Adrian Griffin to be their next head coach. So the Bucks are filled. The Sixers are filled. The Rockets hired Udoka. So it's really just the Suns then, right? The Suns are the only ones. I think there's a couple more head coaching vacancies, but I'm saying in terms of teams that are like win now at all costs, the Suns are vacant. I would like to see Monty Williams get another head coaching opportunity before Doc Rivers. I think if you're just asking me, not who deserves it more in a sense, but who is like going to be a better coach for their team, it's Monty Williams. Now, obviously, both guys, they have their flaws and they have their strengths. I just like Monty Williams better. I don't think it's necessarily... I think he should not have been fired. I think that was kind of messed up. You know, coaching was not the reason that the Suns lost in six games. Coaching was not the reason that the Suns lost in seven games last year to the Mavericks. Coaching isn't the reason the Suns lost in the finals 3 years ago. Or 2 years ago. It's just not the reason. It isn't. This year, for the Suns losing to the Bucks, Chris Paul crumbled and Giannis was unguardable. DeAndre Ayton, huge liability. Against the Mavericks, DeAndre Ayton and Chris Paul crumbled with an injury. DeAndre Ayton, huge liability. Booker couldn't hit a shot. And everyone on the Mavs couldn't miss. This year, Kevin Durant struggled at times mightily in this series against the Nuggets. Devin Booker was the best player on that team by far. And Durant struggled. He had a couple good games, but he had a lot of stinkers in that series. Poor efficiency. Slow starts that the Suns just could not afford. And again, Chris Paul injured and DeAndre Ayton, huge liability. So if they can move on from DeAndre, I think Monty Williams was definitely not the problem again for all the reasons I just said. But, you know, you bring in a new coach, new face with Durant, with Booker, you get off Ayton and recoup some role players, maybe a draft pick if you're lucky. Then you're all smiles. At least I would be if I'm a Phoenix fan. Because your windows right now, Devin Booker, if things keep going this trajectory, he's going to leave. He is going to leave. And he's going to get a fat contract from someone. Let's see when he is a free agent. He is a free agent. Oh, would you look at that? After next year, he is a 2024 unrestricted free agent. And he's going to be 27 years old. If, I mean, if I'm him and things just don't aren't working, like, first of all, he has to make an all-NBA team next year, and then I think he'll be eligible for another Supermax contract because he got the Supermax extension, or he got the Max rookie extension. He's same situation as Jaylen Brown. He didn't make all-NBA this year, whereas Jaylen Brown did, so at the end of next year, Jaylen Brown's eligible for the Supermax. Devin Booker didn't play enough games this year. He got, I mean, he's obviously a fantastic player and is capable of it because he made all-NBA 2 years ago. Or last season, I should say. I keep saying, I'm getting my years wrong, like, in terms of last year, 2 seasons ago, whatever. Last season, he made all NBA first team. This year, he did not. I don't know if he has to make another one to be all NBA. I mean, to be a Supermax eligible, or that one all NBA team he made last year, it kind of makes it A-okay. I'm not really sure exactly how that works, but, he is a 2024 unrestricted free agent. He is making, designated rookie extension, free agent, 2024, unrestricted. He's making $36 million next year, and he will be 27 years old. And I think he is eligible for the contract extension, the four-year, $224 million contract extension, which would earn him a base average salary of $56 million. And it would make him an unrestricted free agent again in 2028 when he's 31 years old. And it would estimate it for the next 4 years from the ages of 27 to 30, he would make $50, $54, $58, and $62 million. More or less exactly the same kind of contract that Jaylen Brown is eligible for. So that all-pro, that all-NBA team he made does already, I think, make him contract eligible. If I'm him, I'm probably not signing that until, like, well, I wouldn't agree to that extension until you see how this year goes. Because right now, Phoenix is in do-or-die mode. They have an aging Kevin Durant. They have a brittle and near-retirement Chris Paul, where, I mean, I think Devin Booker has proved that he's good enough this year to play winning basketball without Chris Paul. He does get lingering injuries every once in a while that'll keep him out 10, 15 games in a year. Which obviously, when if it's only going to be him, the Suns would be in trouble to even make the playoffs because the West is good and it's obviously cluttered like it was this year. So if he could stay healthy and play, you know, 70, 75 games, like, the Suns are good. They don't need Chris Paul. And obviously, if Durant, who hasn't played, I don't think, over 55 games in the past 4 years, if he could stay healthy, then they're more than good in the regular season to make the playoffs. But they need depth, obviously. And if I'm Booker, I'm looking at it and I'm like, yes, that's a shit ton of money. Like, you're going to be making $62 million when you're 30 years old. $62 million. That's crazy. It'd be crazy to turn down that kind of money. Like, all these guys are better off agreeing to the extension and then just demanding a trade when shit goes sideways. Someone will trade for them. You know, franchises can rebuild. The same thing goes with, like, the Celtics right now. If they sign Jaylen Brown and it continues not to work and Jaylen Brown demands a trade, a team's going to give up good assets for Jaylen Brown if he wants to leave after signing the extension. That's just how it's been working. So I got completely off base with what I'm talking about with the Supermax extensions and stuff like that. But the era of, like, three stars on a team are gone. Anyway, Celtics, let's get into it. Heat Nuggets are in the NBA Finals. The Celtics, after being down 3-0, gave enough hope in their fans only to be completely embarrassed at home in Game 7 and lose in the Eastern Conference Finals yet again. Jimmy Butler goes to his second finals appearance with the Miami Heat, the first one being in the bubble in 2020 where they lost to the Lakers in, was it 5 or 6? They got pretty dominated by the Lakers in 2020. So Jimmy Butler, I want him more than anything to get a ring. I am full Heat culture, Heat Nation. Let's go, Jimmy Butler. James Buckets, I am all in on them. Caleb Martin nearly winning Eastern Conference Finals MVP was crazy. Jimmy Butler just narrowed him out by, like, I think a vote. So it's, I mean, he was sensational. Obviously, there was a whole, I saw some things going around on Twitter comparing Jaylen Brown's stats and Caleb Martin's stats, where Jaylen Brown and Caleb Martin had, like, basically the same amount of points in this series, but Jaylen Brown had, like, significantly more shots, which is just not fair. Obviously, Caleb Martin is not asked to do the things that Jaylen Brown has done. He is a player that made the most of his opportunity, and I gotta tip my cap to him and give him credit. He was sensational this series, but he is not asked to do the things that Jaylen Brown is asked to do, and he does not have the pressure on him that Jaylen Brown is asked to do. If Caleb Martin goes out there and scores 20 points in a game, you're happy, and it's just like a cherry on top, you know? It's not like you're expecting him to go out there and be a 20-point-per-game scorer. You're just not. Same thing goes for Gabe Vincent. Gabe Vincent, I think, had, like, what, 28, 29 points in one of these games during this series. You're not asking Gabe Vincent to go out there and give you 25 points every single game. You're just not. Max Strus, same thing, if he gives you 20. All these guys, the only guys you send out there on the court every night and expect to be in control of the game and lead your team and score and defend when you really need, like, stops or whatever, Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. They are the leaders of this team. They are the two best players on this team. And those are the only guys who have, like, set expectations because they're good and they have a track record of being excellent. Everyone else after that is just, it's extra. If Kevin Love hits a few threes, awesome. Like, Max Strus scores 20. Duncan Robinson scores 20. Gabe Vincent, Caleb Martin. If any of them break 20 points, you're on your hands and feet, like, cheering because it's just, like, extra. Again, it's just extra. You're not going into the game being like, hey, man, if we want to win this game, we need 20 from Max Strus tonight. Okay, what? Like, no one's doing that. Max Strus, the only thing you want him to do is try on defense and hit his threes, which he does to an exceptional degree, as all these guys have. Again, all these guys I just listed, outside of Duncan Robinson's defense, but Robinson's hit his threes. Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, they've all played really good defense, individual and team, and they hit their shots. And that's how the Heat have been successful all playoffs. Jimmy Butler leads the way. Bam's right behind him. They play good team defense. They play good individual defense. They hit their threes and their open shots. And Eric Spoelstra is just, he's a complete whiz, man. He's a mastermind. The defenses that he sends, I saw it firsthand in the Knicks, firsthand against the Celtics, like, and against the Bucks too, as well. Like, he is able to game plan for everyone. Doesn't matter who you are. Giannis, he actually said Brunson was the only one who was like, no matter what we threw at him, he kept scoring, which is like, shout out Jalen Brunson, salute. But, you know, everyone else on the Knicks, they struggled. You know, Julius Randle struggled. RJ Barrett had a handful of good games, but he struggled a couple times against the Heat as well, especially in the closeout game, game six. He was horrendous. But Giannis, I mean, Giannis got injured. They couldn't really contain Giannis, to be fair. He had two great games, but they won because he sucked at the free throw line. But everyone else outside of Giannis, Eric Spoelstra gave him fits. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and the rest of the Celtics, he gave them fits. Like, he is a mastermind. I have no doubt that he's able to go. He's going to be able to whip up some type of game plan to try and neutralize Jokic, which is going to be damn near impossible. I think Bam Adebayo is going to be in a significant disadvantage against Jokic, so they're going to have some real defensive scheme to try and stop him, but they have I said I'm rooting for the Heat, but it is not lost on me that they have a significant uphill battle here. That being said, you look at the path to the playoffs, drastically different. The Heat, they face the one seed in the first round, and then the Knicks, who the five seed, and then the two seed in the finals. The Nuggets played two play-in tournament teams. Like, it's with the Lakers and, who'd they play in the first round? The Timberwolves. So, I mean, Devin Booker was the only one who really challenged them. Booker and Durant had two games where they went absolutely nuclear and the Nuggets lost. But other than that, it's been a cakewalk for them, you know? And the Heat have gone over adversity after adversity, tough series after tough series, and really, really high-level teams. And now they're kind of just, they get a couple days off, and they're rolling into Thursday for game one, whereas the Nuggets have been, you know, not sitting around, obviously they've been practicing and stuff, but they've been resting for, when the finals start, I think 8 or 9 days, right? So again, I said this in the beginning of the podcast, but it's really going to put to test the rest versus rust argument of, would you rather your team have a long period off to recuperate, or would you rather just stay in that mentality and get a couple days to catch your breath and then just go, you know, roll right into it. We're going to get that. Obviously, Jimmy Butler's a dog. I expect him to be a problem in this series. I give the Heat the matchup in head coaching, but Malone he's been good, you know. I know that Nikola Jokic is the best player on the Nuggets. I know that he's probably arguably the best player in the NBA behind Giannis, if anything. But you have a hard time convincing me that Jamal Murray is not the X factor for the Nuggets. Like, he is the guy that, like, Jokic can have a 30-point triple-double, he can have 50 points, and the Nuggets can lose if Murray is not on his A-game. Like, he is the guy that completely changes this team because, yes, you're worried about Jokic, obviously. He can hurt you in so many ways. He's a complete offensive player. He is a liability on defense a little bit. You know, I don't think he's horrible, as many people say, but he's not. I'm not going to say he's good. But Jamal Murray is the guy that, if he's hitting his shots, if he's hitting those step-back mid-ranges, if he's hitting those pull-up threes, if he's hitting those floaters, getting to the line, whatever it may be, the Nuggets just, like, it happened in the Lakers series. All four games in the Lakers series, this happened. And the Lakers, people have been clowning them, like, you know, everyone's saying the Lakers have never, you know, no team has ever been swept more better than the Lakers, you know, which it is true to a degree. I mean, the Lakers, outside of game one, held a lead in the fourth quarter in every single game in the series. They were all winnable games, but who was there at the end of basically every game to close out the Lakers? Jamal Murray. He would be on fire. There was that one game he had 14 entering the fourth quarter. He ended with like 31. It was insane. Like, he, when he is on fire, when he is hitting his jump shots, the Nuggets are borderline unstoppable. So if you're just looking to neutralize someone, I think, honestly, you should be a little bit more concerned with Jamal Murray than Nikola Jokic. Because Jokic, you can try and try and try, but he can affect the game in so many ways. He's going to crash the boards and get rebounds over, I'm going to say, honestly, I don't know if there's anyone on the Heat that is going to really be able to affect him on the boards. It's going to be a struggle on the glass for them. So he can affect the boards. Obviously, he is a sensational passer, and he'll be able to score. You know, you're not going to be able to completely limit him unless he gets into foul trouble. And the guy that can put up points in a hurry is Jamal Murray. Rhyme intended. So that's my thing. I'm saying Jamal Murray is the X factor, man. You got to look at him and just be really, really cautious about him getting hot, because then you're going to be in a hole that is damn near impossible to get out of. And the Nuggets are, I mean, I wouldn't say they're deep, but they have a 7 or 8 man rotation that is lethal. Lethal. So I guess for the playoffs, that's deep. For the regular season, maybe not so much, but for the playoffs, that's deep. 8 guys that all contributing, that's pretty good. And the Heat are obviously, they're deep as well. They have a great rotation going on right now with everyone playing super high level basketball. So yeah, I love what Jimmy Butler said. You know, they're not role players to me, they're just teammates. And everyone's role changes every game. Love that. Love that quote. Great Leader by Jimmy Butler. Or How to Be a Great Leader by Jimmy Butler 101. There you go. And I think Jimmy deserves this, man. I Jokic, I like him. I think he's sensational. He definitely deserves one as well. But if you're asking me who I think deserves it more, it's Jimmy Butler. I mean, this guy is just like a playoff god. He really is. He needs it, man. He needs it, dude. He needs it. And I want it for him. As for the Celtics, we mentioned it briefly, or I was talking about it before. Jaylen Brown, you know, that's a whole thing. Are they going to sign him? Does he want to leave? I think regardless, he's going to sign the extension just because it's way too much money on the table to leave on the table. But don't be surprised if he signs that and then in the next like 2 years, he's like, trade me. You know, I don't want to be here anymore. But the Celtics obviously have some housekeeping to do and some roster spots to fill out to better equip this team to finally get over that hump. Go Heat. I'm excited for the playoffs to conclude the NBA Finals. I'm going to be in Vegas this weekend. That's where I'm going. So I'll be in Vegas for the first two games, I believe, of the Finals. I know the first game is Thursday. I'm hoping the next game is Saturday. If it's Sunday, that's going to suck. But, oh my God, it is. That's so annoying. You're going Friday and Saturday without a game, both in Denver. That is so lame. Sunday at 8 o'clock. Puke. So I'll be there for game one. Whatever. Play some bets. That'll do it for this episode from my point of view. Thank you all very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. Next week, again, we'll have our regularly scheduled podcast on Tuesday, but I'll also probably put out an Into the Spider-Verse solo review, solo episode, whenever I get around to seeing that movie this upcoming week, because I'm not going to be able to see it this weekend. So, again, thank you all for listening. Appreciate you as always. And I'll talk to you all next week. Go Heat. Legacies, family, ways, see the legacy, going like a Montana, honey killers on the hands.